But then, Rabbit's a ghoster. He'll just ghost.
Right. It's not a ghost. It's just like, I won't, like, you're not on the top of my mind of someone I bring stuff up to, right? So you slowly fade away.
Yeah. Now, that's a skill you and I both have. We share in common is the ability to literally mentally erase someone, right? Where they no longer cross your path. And that's it's a very dangerous skill.
But and sometimes it's not even on purpose. It's like,
Damn, guys are old.
It's just cold. If I see you every day, and then like you're on top of my mind, if you're not, like it's hard to like just think outside of my bubble that I'm in.
Yeah.
Hey there. Welcome to the Gluten-Free Organic Thoughts Podcast, where you are encouraged to express your natural thoughts and views through casual, meaningful conversations that hopefully can lead to learning and understanding new perspectives. To find out more info, visit www.gfothoughts.com. Now, here are your hosts, Michael Wong and Robert Din. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back. For those who are constant listeners, we have our 52nd episode today. Today is a special recording where we are doing this live. Yes, if you're watching this live, we have not edited this episode yet. But guess what? We have two special guests coming back today. And for those who don't know me, my name is Michael. I am one of the co-hosts for the Gluten-Free Organic Thought Podcast. And today we have two returning guests. Michelle, she's a private elementary school teacher, high energetic, straightforward. She's no BS. And we have my good old friend, old roommate, Jonathan, engineered by trade, actually engineered by skill set and paper, but you know, he's a hustler, entrepreneur, coach by trade. And again, another person, a favorite person of mine, high energetic, and always with me, Robert Din.
How's it going, everyone? Welcome back. I'm so like, this is so crazy that we're doing this live. We don't know how this is going to go. So you guys might get like half an episode. You might get a full one. You might get crazy one. Anything can happen today. Happy to have Michelle and Jonathan back on the show. A couple of our top guests that we've had over the past year. One year anniversary,
putting
Mike.
Putting that on my resume. Top guests.
There you go. We were getting that. Love it.
Well, welcome back, Michelle and Jonathan. First of all, let's kick it off with drinks. Michelle, what are you having today?
I'm drinking a green tea with, I believe, orange blossom honey. Ooh. Out of my favorite watermelon mug.
Wow.
Watermelon mug.
Yeah.
That is a fancy drink right there.
Well, talk about Saturday fun day, right?
Yeah.
This is like low key, very chill.
Low key, okay.
Saturday afternoon drink.
Yeah.
Boo, Jonathan. Jonathan, what you got? What are you booing about?
I just kept it classic today for my guy Robert. You got some Jack Daniels on the rocks.
Oh, Jack Daniels on the rocks. I like it.
Beautiful damaged cup. So we're good.
You know, no clear cup that we can't tell is true. Or
that's
water.
True. It could be anything.
I could be lying though. Yeah.
We've had a thing where Mike every week would come on with a thermos or like something, and it has it's black. So and he changes up what he has inside every time. We're like, maybe he's just lying to us. Maybe it's yeah. We don't know what it is.
Way to get away with it, honestly.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
All right. So Robert, go ahead. What do you have?
I got a special bottle today, a special bottle of rosé. This is a sparkling rosé from Laird in Napa Valley.
Oh,
it's a very fancy bottle that we're opening up today for celebration.
All right. So today, because it is our 52nd episode, our 1 year anniversary, I am busting out some alcohol.
Nice. Finally.
Actually,
you've had a few times when you had coffee and I put it some Kahlua.
So you know, once in a while, I tend to forget Miami does have some nice microbrewery. I just went to watch a soccer game recently, Vesa Sur. So pretty much, I just wanted to. I actually like this Mangolandia beer. It's pretty much. Can you all see it?
Let me
see.
Yeah.
And so it's like a wheat ale beer, pretty much. And so. Right. I just want to open it up just in case that David Roberts doesn't think it's water.
Yeah. It could be anything.
It could be. Nah, it's not everything.
Now he's opening it up on camera, live for us.
don't condone alcohol drinking, okay, by the way, just so you know.
We don't what's the opposite of condone?
Yeah. Cheers.
Cheers, everyone.
Cheers.
Congrats on the 52nd episode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A year of gluten-free organic thoughts.
Thank you, guys. Wow.
Me and Robert survived not killing each other, right?
That's true.
You guys make a good duo.
Absolutely.
All right, so for this episode, going forward, we're going to do a little bit different. We're going to we decided to pick the topics and form that in a form of one question, and we're going to discuss that question. So our two guests have picked the topics, and we're going to kick it off with one of my current one first, because it's a current event that just happened recently. So in Miami, they just had a Bitcoin conference, I think a couple of weeks ago. And one of the, one of the biggest trend right now, obviously Bitcoin's becoming mainstream. And a lot of countries are slowly trying to adapt that maybe try to become their currency, at least to stabilize the currency. So they try to adopt Bitcoin. So I think recently was El Salvador. El Salvador just, tried to pretty much legitimize Bitcoin as one of the currency. So the question that I'm formulating this is that, will central banks let currency coexist like a real currency next to fiat, or overtake it and it will just be like another form of vehicle where they can just make money and screw the little guy over like they do in the stock market?
Okay.
So any thoughts, anybody, before I share my perspective?
So I think we already have stuff like USDC. We already have stable coins. I think...
Robert, actually, take a step back. What is stable coins for those who don't know what it is?
Stable coins are cryptocurrencies that are pegged to some currency that's fiat, right? So mm-hmm. like USDC is pegged to the US dollar. There's also Euro ones and British pound ones. And like every fiat basically has its own like stable currency where it's pegged to that currency. I feel like the central banks, they're eventually have to get on board and create some sort of stable currencies to just be on these markets, right? Like I feel like they wouldn't want to miss that opportunity anyways, so they might as well
there's too much money to miss out, you're saying?
Yeah, the more adoption that gets on with like cryptocurrencies, I feel like there's no way they're going to be able to disallow it, I guess. Mm-hmm. it's going to be really hard to just like ban it the way China's doing or whatever.
Well, one of the issues is that one of the issues with the cryptocurrency is that people tend to use it in the black market, right? Mm-hmm. So it's hard to track for criminal activities. And a lot of people are talking that because El Salvador is not just a stable country, there's a lot of criminal going on. They think that the reason why they're doing it because the Congress could be corrupt. That's the reason why that's tied to the discussion, right? However, though, it does lift people out in a way, because they even announced that they're going to drop whoever opens a Bitcoin account, they get $30. $30 is a lot for El Salvador. So
that's awesome.
Into account. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, but so how do you gain the trust of the greater population around Bitcoin and those coins aside from traditional payment options? Because I think there's still some volatility in the marketplace. I've experienced it, at least.
That's true.
And Dogecoin. So how do you get
Dogecoin? You've been
trading Dogecoin? Oh my God. Yeah,
more dog coins. Yeah.
Yeah. Shameless plug, but it's all good. That's my concern around the truck.
So Jonathan, to answer one of your questions, Dogecoin obviously is it's a meme coin. I'm not sure you know what meme coin is, right? It's pretty much someone created a coin just for the hell out of it. That's all it was. Like there's no utility behind it. Mm-hmm. And we're surprised that this became so popular where it actually got on main exchanges like Coinbase, and Binance and stuff like that.
The thing is, like, the meme coins are basically like these meme stocks, right? Like AMC and all these stuff. Like they're just like gaining popularity because they're popular, and then like they're just going up because of that. It's not really, there's no use behind it. There's no backing to it, right?
Yep.
So the Dogecoins are a little suspect, but also like Bitcoin has had 50% spikes either way, like on any day. So it's not like cryptocurrency right now is the most stable thing. But like I'm saying, like stable coins have been stable the whole time. They're one, pegged to the dollar. They're 1-to-1. One USDC is one US dollar. Yeah. So there's no
volatility there. The way that I would see this transitioning is that in the order of their popularity is that does your savings account give you more than 1% return from having your cash in there, right? It doesn't. Not even 0.1%. So the next step is move your half your savings account into a stablecoin. You get 10% APY now in your just holding stablecoin. So you're not going to lose value. I have half of my savings in stablecoins right now because even, I'm getting
like the conservative ports, like Coinbase is very conservative. They're giving what 0.15% for USDC, but there's other coins where they're getting 4 or 5%. That's on Coinbase, which is like the most conservative on the sites.
That's true.
But isn't there some, like, if I needed to access that money at some point, isn't there like a conversion or a service fee?
So converting it back, right? Converting it back, there is a small fee, isn't it? There is a small fee.
For USDC, there's no. Like USDC on Coinbase is basically cash, basically fiat. So going from USD to USDC is free, but going from USDC or USD to any other currency, cryptocurrency, has a small fee on there.
Yep.
Gotcha. Yeah. I have to take a step back and listen during this topic because my financial literacy is not great. Like, vulnerable moment right now. Like, I'm like trying to understand like all the coins and like non-fungible tokens.
Too much.
And like,
it's too much.
It's a lot. Yeah.
It's a lot.
So much.
Michelle's just all in the Dogecoin because it's on the news. That's what it is.
Dogecoin is. I know my memes.
one of the things is that I was trying to say earlier, like, to gain that trust, right? It's this crazy stat out there. Only 6% of the population in the United States only has some kind of cryptocurrency. 6%, which is technically, we haven't really hit mainstream yet. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, right? Like, I remember one of my friends was telling me, his grandma told him, hey, can we buy $1,000 of Dogecoin? I'm like, the grandma heard about it. I'm like, wow. Yeah. So it's slowly becoming mainstream.
Yeah.
That's big. Yeah.
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 Because Elon Musk is tweeting about it. So of course, all of our grandmas are going to see it if they're on Twitter. You know, they got their...
That's true.
Their Facebook, they're trying to be part of the mix, you know?
Grandma on Twitter, think about this.
She's been following Elon on Twitter, for sure. You got it.
They're an inclusive place, yeah.
And I want to respond to like what you said about like the, right now, like cryptocurrency is associated with like the black market and like,
yep,
like other stuff like that. But like, what did they use before they had cryptocurrency? They used fiat money. They use cash, so it's the same. Like, they're just, it's just a different, anywhere that you go with any currency, there's gonna be a way for them to use it, right?
I don't know. I found it interesting when there was that like Colonial Pipeline hacking like a month ago, that they actually were able to like pay the ransom that was being asked, and they were able to like recover, I think, like half of it. Mm-hmm. So that to me was like pretty interesting, you know.
And the great thing about the blockchain is everything is recorded. You might not know who owns the addresses, but everything is recorded on the ledger. Yeah,
it's so tracked.
You know where all the money is at all times.
That's true. It's tracked. If we find out who owns a wallet eventually, you have evidence.
Yeah.
So why do you say eventually? It takes some work, or
it takes some work, but it's hard.
Yeah. It's hard to find out who owns any of the wallets.
Yeah, unless it's, you're in an exchange and it's tied to your name, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then that exchange decides to reveal the information, which most likely not. But that's the only way that, and those are centralized exchanges. But that's assuming that they're somehow withdraw the money.
So is it fair to say the anonymity of the Coinbase process is attracted to people that are trying to like hide net worths and all these different things, hide resources?
Not necessarily. It's at the end of the day, it's about the benefits, right? Instant, it's clear, and the best part about it is secure.
Mm-hmm.
So secure
is a tough word, though. Is from your perspective, or you feel like the general population feels it's secure?
I feel like it's very, you cannot hack it. It's very hard to hack that.
No one's ever hacked Bitcoin. They've hacked companies that are using cryptocurrency.
Correct.
And that's how they hack it. So I don't know. I haven't heard of any Bitcoin hacks or crypto hacks like that.
So Robert, you feel the same level of confidence that Wong has in terms of putting half his savings in Bitcoin?
I probably have more than half in crypto. I also work for a crypto exchange, so I'm in the crypto business, so that I'm pretty all in on it. So,
yeah. So as soon as we like end this, I'm gonna go put half my savings in something.
Oh my god, this is not financial advice, guys.
This is not financial advice.
Not financial advice. We don't want to be liable for any of this.
Right? That's true. We already recorded this. It's not a financial advice.
Disclaimer now.
Oh my god.
Look, I saw Michelle's eyes going away from the screen, like she was like,
"All right, I'm
opening
I'm
new tab."
All right, so with that being said, though, we are going to start seeing a lot of countries who is not stabilized to probably move to get that legal tender in, you know, that currency, because at the end of the day, a lot of these countries probably has a lot of debt or instability. They have to find some balance to stabilize this, and I think this is a way to do it, to be honest. So
I'm surprised there's not more countries that haven't switched over yet, but eventually it'll happen. And you need one to start, right?
It takes infrastructure, it takes knowledge, it takes a lot of scalability behind that, like a lot of prep work probably, you know. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this country may not have the money to even get to that level. So yeah,
that's true. Yeah. I'm all in for Acoin. Have you guys heard of Acoin?
No.
Acon is starting up a city. And it's all gonna have based on cryptocurrency.
Yep.
And Acoin is the currency.
I'm here for puns. Like, give me more punny, coins. I'll take it.
Those are the ones that are going to hit mainstream for sure.
Yeah.
All right. So we're pivoting now. So Michelle, want to kick off your topic? I think you have an amazing topic. So
this is funny because when you reached out to me about topics, you definitely said pick a topic that's passionate to you, and I pick topics that I care about or that I'm interested in. But anyway, this definitely is a topic that defines who I am. So I've been a pescatarian for half my life, 16 years. I don't really think twice about it anymore. But I also, I'm on a couple of dating sites now, and I'll be, you know, swiping, and I'll see people who will put in their bio, if you're a vegan or a vegetarian, swipe left. And I'm
Oh
man, yikes.
Well, you are in Miami though. No, you are in Miami.
I am in Miami. I get it. There's a lot of people love their ham croquetas. I understand. But at the same time, I feel yes, it's important to be true to your cultural roots and whatnot. But what is the problem with being a vegetarian or being a vegan? Especially if it's not you. I just want to understand why it's viewed at so negatively by people who are not. Because part of my identity, I'm a teacher. Okay, listen, down. I'm still on my soapbox, okay? So I'm a teacher, I teach pre-K, and one of the topics that we talk about, we talk about science, we talk about different cultures, and I love science, and so I focus on the Amazon. And a lot of what I talk about when I talk about the Amazon is it's disappearing. And they're but why? And I'm well, they're turning it into farms. They're moving more cattle out there. People are eating more meat. And then that day for lunch, we're serving freaking hamburgers to these little kids. And I'm oh my God, you know? So it's definitely a complicated topic, but I just want to know, what is the problem with being a vegetarian or a vegan for the bigger picture?
All right. Okay. Can I start with this?
First off though, I think the three guys on here are not vegetarian, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But
we're just gonna preface that as that.
So I'm gonna get a good answer. I really.
Or, hang on. No. So I tried to be a vegetarian for 7 months. Okay. So I have a little bit of experience with it. My mom does vegetarian food, and so I have no issue being vegetarian. However, though, I've dated a girl who was a vegetarian, and it is tough.
Right. I've also dated a vegetarian
girl. How? Because I don't have a hard time with it. So
no. It's not the girl. It's me. But the reason why is because I got to make sure that I pick a place that
every day
that caters her as well. Yeah. Right. So it is, you know, going out a little bit my way, but at the same time, I don't mind it. But when I keep this in mind, this was a couple of years ago, and it's easier in LA because there's more vegetarian options. Okay.
Yeah.
Where in Miami, it's a lot harder to pick places. Okay. And not only that, there's a lot of cross contamination stuff where sometimes people may not like that. And that's one of the issues. There's nothing wrong with that. And actually, believe it or not, I've watched documentaries like The Game Changer and The Fork Over Knife that talks about the benefits of being a vegetarian. Even see athletes doing this. And so there's nothing wrong with it personally. Myself, I don't find it. It's just for me, it was a little bit of my way, but I don't mind it as an issue, but more like it's always on my mind. Not only that, when I cook food for them, right? Same exact concept, right? I gotta make sure that we have to cater towards them. So every time I had a potluck, I always have a vegetarian dishes because I know some of my friends are vegetarian. So I have no issue with that.
That's so considerate of you. I went to an end of the year like school gathering in my department, and they completely forgot that I was a vegetarian. So they had like rice mixed in like pulled chicken, and they had I couldn't really eat anything besides the Caesar salad. You know, and then like a week later, the woman who was hosting it at her home texted me and was like, "Oh my God, Michelle!" Like, and she's like, "I forgot you were like a vegetarian." I'm like, "Dude, it's all good. Like, I'm not trying to cause a problem by being a vegetarian. I'm not trying to inconvenience anybody. But like, for people to be like actively dating and just be like, "Oh, you're a vegetarian. I don't even want to talk to you." Like,
it's crazy. That, they're going a whole another level. That means they have some kind of hate behind that.
Well, no,
I don't know if it's hate. Jonathan.
I agree with Mike, right? It's kind of like in that space that you're referring to around dating and stuff like that, it almost becomes like a foundational, pivotal mark, negative or positive. It's something that should be taken serious because everything is pivoted off of that. Food, like it's almost like food. Some people have religion as a pivotal mark.
That's true.
Some people have not necessarily athleticism, but an active lifestyle. Like if I live an active lifestyle, I honestly wouldn't want to date someone that didn't understand it at the very least, or it'd be even better if they were part of it.
That's
right.
True.
Because you have to make those special considerations. You're like, hey, Michelle, I forgot. Okay. I got to go to this place. I got to accommodate her. And it almost feels, I want to maybe use the word limiting because I may like Steak 48 and they may not have any, you know, vegetarian options, and I'm like, I can't even go there because Michelle doesn't like it, you know. And depending on, you know, geographically where you live, it's even more difficult in some places. I live in the South, right? So we don't have, we don't have fast food vegetarian options, right? You got to make it work. You got to say, hey, I'm at such and such. Can you take the meat off? Can you add the
tofu?
Or you're just eating like French fries or something.
Well, here's the thing. I feel like now that I'm talking to you guys and you're kind of explaining like you want to try to pick a restaurant and it limits you, like I think that is like a self-imposed like view that guys have. Like I have to pick a restaurant that she's going to be like 100% happy with, or that's going to have like many, many options for her. Like really for me, like the only place I really, really cannot eat is like a barbecue joint. Like it's just uncomfortable. Usually those are like, I don't know. I don't want to like talk shit, but it's usually like the dustiest place. Like the salad bar is like a little creepy. Like I don't love it in general, but like anywhere that I go, like I can usually figure something out, like, you know, remove the chicken or like, you know what I mean? Like I can figure it out, but.
So Michelle, here's an example. You're on a road trip with Robbie.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Well, it's two of us. All right.
You guys are coming back from a vacation, whatever. And obviously hunger hits at some point. Like, man, I'm hungry. You hungry? Like, yeah. And you're in the middle of nowhere. Right? And you're like, okay, here are the options, Michelle. We've got Cracker Barrel. We've got Golden Corral. We got all
McDonald's.
These, yeah, McDonald's. Like,
yeah. I eat at all three, man. I can find Yeah, I'll tell you exactly. Like at McDonald's, I'll get the filet of fish because I told you I eat fish. Okay. Love me a McFlurry, Oreo McFlurry with French fries. And just let me say, if I'm going on a road trip anywhere, I promise you there's going to be an entire seat full of snacks. There's going to be a bag. bag, and I am not going hungry.
All right, Michelle, maybe we should go on a road trip. This sounds awesome.
No, I'm figured out. I love a good adventure. Let's go.
All right, for me here, right? Like, I did a vegetarian girl, and we're the food wise, like, it was, that's a big concern for sure. But the thing is, like, I'm like a huge foodie, so like I want to experience food with this girl, but then when we go to certain foods, like she just can't have it. And so it's like more like sometimes it's a little isolating when you're going and like eating things that are like that you find so good, and you're like, oh, you should no, you can't try this, but like it's
I'll share the experience.
Hey, like trying to share experiences is a little difficult. So
it's limiting. Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like that's one thing. Also, when you first meet people, they say, like, how do you know someone's a vegan? Is they'll tell you they're a vegan, right?
And yeah, sure. They'll tell you.
So it's very true. And the first time you meet someone, there might be some headbutting there where they're like, oh yeah, you shouldn't be eating meat or something. Like, maybe not the first date, maybe the second or third, they'll be trying to push it onto you, and you don't really want that.
But right? See, that is a stereotype about people who choose to cut meat or, you know, cut dairy out of their lives, that they're like trying to push this shit on you.
Because I had a roommate, and she told me, she's pushing me.
Let's go deeper, Michelle. Let's go deeper. If you meet someone that isn't a vegan, right, or pescatarian, and you guys decide to, you know, get married, have children, all these different things, how do you raise the children? Under your belief system or your dietary restrictions?
You know, I was raised like eating different kinds of meats. Like, let me tell you something. Before I became a vegetarian, I used to live and die by the Whopper Jr. at Burger King. I loved it. Every time I would get one, it would be like mouthwatering, just the best experience ever. And it was hard to cut that out, you know? But like, if I were to have kids in the future, like, I want them to make decisions on their own. Like, I don't want to impose every single belief that I have onto my children. Obviously, it's natural for you to bring your own beliefs into that like parent-child relationship, but I came to my own decision when I decided I wanted to stop eating meat. And yeah, at first it wasn't very kosher, no pun intended, like dietary. Like, I had a close friend who was doing it, and I was like, I don't even think I could do that. I eat bacon all the freaking time. Like, I don't think it's possible for me to cut it out. And I like quit cold turkey, and I never really looked back, you know? And I've definitely had a couple of like slip ups, unintentional slip ups, but
unintentional.
Yeah, I was way drunk eating half a lamb hero in South Beach, but we don't need to go there.
No, we don't.
There's some arepas here.
Okay, there are vegetarian arepas. I love arepas, you know? Like, and back to your point, Robert, about like wanting to share food experiences. Like, I love going to restaurants. Like, Miami Spice is like one of my favorite times, like being in Miami. Like, I go to all the restaurants and try the foods. And sometimes it is a little tricky because it's a fixed menu. But like, I love sharing my food, and I don't want anybody to feel like they have to ask me, like, can I order a burger? Or like I'm not trying to impose myself on anybody. This is just how I feel.
No, it's not about like, I won't order food because she's a vegetarian, right? Like, that's never been an issue. It's more like, oh my God, this is amazing. I want you to share this with me. So if that's the limiting factor, then we kind of like are missing on an opportunity where we could be having
connecting experience.
But if you're connecting on so many other levels, and that's like the only thing, like your vegetarian girl is still willing to go to the restaurant with you and eat at the table with you and share her food with you, like, and she just can't try like one thing that you're having that you're enjoying. Like, honestly, if that were me, I'd be like, damn, I'm so glad you're loving it. Like, we definitely got to come back, you know? Like,
but so go here's another perspective, right?
Okay.
I don't know why I always go to the most extreme, but you're in a situation where you're married, you're in a home, right? The guy is not a vegetarian. Essentially, you have to create two separate meals every day, or he has to create, whoever is cooking. Those considerations have to be made, or somebody's got to choose not to, you know, be a one or the other. Mm-hmm. So we can eat the same. So obviously it wouldn't be you choosing to be a meat eater. It would be him choosing to eat vegan options. So that, I don't know, what do you think about that? Would that pose a challenge or a friction point in the relationship?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little challenging. I think, like, there are times when, because I've lived with a significant other before, and I think there are times where you guys are just not in the mood for the same meal altogether. You know, so, like, there are nights where, like, I'll be heating up, like, a pizza, and he's, like, ordering Chipotle. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes it just, there's, like, a total miss in, like, the taste buds. But like, there are also moments where like you just figure out like, okay, like let's have like rice beans and like a little salad, and hey, you want some chicken on the side, like we'll cook up some chicken over here too, you know? Or like, I feel like there are like adjustments that can be made. And
so do you have an issue cooking like meat options?
Honestly, I don't have an issue cooking. My only issue cooking is that I'm not very good at it. So, like, I don't know if you want me cooking your chicken.
I'm going to ruin that chicken for you on purpose.
Yeah. Oh, no. You can't eat the chicken now. It's burnt.
Sorry. Oh, no.
Okay.
No. I...
Hey, Robert, minus one. Minus one.
Okay, Michelle, to be honest with you, though, keep this in mind, though. At least the three guys here, we're a little bit more considerate of what we're trying to, you know, think of, especially if it's first day of the, you know, because a lot of people are not even thinking about that term, where they're not trying to go out of their way to try to be considerate for others, right? And yeah. Again, every guy is different, or you know, every person's different, whether you're guy or girl, right? Like, it's gonna come down to is how much you're willing to give, and to kind of, you know, to especially. Like you said, if you had that connection, yeah, you're willing to work with it and tweak around with it, right? But if there are like upfront people that saying that kind of stuff, you know, especially in the profile, you wouldn't even want to be with those people in the first place.
Yeah.
maybe it's a good indicator, right?
Yeah, that's true. It is.
I'm not gonna lie. I'm like, oh, you're telling me to swipe left? Done. You know?
Yeah. It lets me know that Michelle feels limited, because those people probably potentially she may have been attracted to.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, honestly, sometimes I see like things on the profile and I'm like, okay, like I see you. And then it's like vegetarian. I'm like, okay, there goes that, like, you know, 2 second attraction. Bye-bye.
Just switch, man. Eat a steak and you'll be good. You know?
that's the solution.
Jonathan, just stay drunk.
Oh. There you go.
I got it.
Hilarious.
All right, well, hopefully we gave you a decent perspective for your answers for your topic, though. I do think that's a good question, because I mean, when I tried it for 7 months straight, I did struggle finding options, but I got lucky because my mom, both of my parents are chefs, so therefore my parents used to have a whole vegetarian section in the restaurant. We have monks coming to the restaurant, so my mom perfected like fake chicken, fake meat, fake stuff. So when I was struggling finding stuff, I was able to make it myself, right? Mm-hmm. In LA, it was easy to find stuff because they were creative. The people there out there looking for different type of vegetarian food, so they were super creative with those vegetarian food. Yeah. So again, like Jonathan said, it really varies on the demographic area, and it's going to come down to is what you're willing to give and take type of deal.
The one thing, I don't want to keep diving into it. I know you're trying to transition, Mike, but the one thing I struggle with is that a lot of vegetarian options try to emulate meat.
That's true.
I don't understand. Is it because of the consistency that you like to, you know, fill in your mouth?
That's actually a good question. That's good. For me, it's the consistency, correct. But not necessarily mean that I crave meat, but it's just more like, wow, they went out of the way to think about this. This is still healthy. And it's not affecting the environment on top of that. And I still have the texture.
That's art to me. I would rather it just be vegetarian and be good, or like vegan and be good, versus like trying to make it a meat dish.
Yeah,
like, I'd rather just not have it. I don't know.
A lot of times you're like
these are healthy foods and it just tastes bad, and then everyone's like, oh, this is delicious, and I'm like, no, this is bad food, like you should.
Okay, like, here's an example. Buffalo chicken wings. Okay, I love chicken wings in general. Like chicken wings in general, okay? I'm a big fan of buffalo. I had a hard time finding something similar to that. And so at this place made buffalo chicken nuggets. but vegan style. And it was jackfruit based and with a little bit of cauliflower to get that texture, the friedness outside.
Yeah.
And they did such a good job. Like, I don't want to go back to chicken wings because that alone just, and it's cheaper too. So.
Yeah. I used to kind of have a problem with that. Like, I thought it was weird. Like, why are they pretending to make like chicken? And like, if I want to eat chicken, I could just go eat chicken, you know? That's but true. Now it is like a way for me to like kind of diversify a little bit my meal. Like sometimes I'll make like a fettuccine Alfredo and I'll like heat up a couple of like the Gardein like chicken tenders and I'll like throw them on top. And it's like a nice little extra like culinary touch. Yeah. Like I said, I don't really cook that much. So don't
I mean, Jonathan, you can only eat rice and beans so much. Okay. Let's be honest.
So that's my other piece, right? From a dietary place that I'm in. Yeah. My anatomy is, I struggle with maintaining weight and I desire to be a little heavier. It'll be a challenge for me to get those calories and the protein intake that I need to sustain a heavier physique.
Bro, you do two a day though. So let's not go with that. Let's not go with that. You do two a day, bro. Let's not go with that.
I get it.
Jonathan works out at 6 in the morning and at 6 p.m. Let me tell you, okay? There's a reason why he's struggling maintaining weight, okay?
Crazy.
Fitness goals over here.
if you follow him on IG, listen, let me tell you, I see his IG story at 6 a.m. Oh, I see you, Jonathan, all right?
Oh, my God.
Every day, yeah.
No, the pandemic wrecked my fitness routine. Like, let's not
do further. Oh, you got to be creative. You got to get creative.
Yeah, you have to be creative. 100% agree on that part. Yeah.
I was literally on like my door, like open the door, and I like kind of grabbed the top because I broke my pull-up bar, so I had to do pull-up.
Oh my God, bro! How did you not rip the door off the hinge?
You gotta hey, slow and steady. Slow and steady.
Yeah. Believe it or not, those doors can hold 300 pounds. I should Google this up too.
Yeah. That's the most random thing to Google, huh? Sheer stress. I have to know how much weight a door can hold.
Yeah.
Sheer stress.
Yeah.
That's funny.
All right, Jonathan. So we're going to pivot to your topic. I love your topic. So please introduce the topic and what is the question to your topic?
Perfect. Let me just scroll up and remember what it was. So you want to do the first one or the second one?
The first one, Envious Friends. I like that one a lot.
So here we are, guys. We talked about, the topic is envious friends, right?
Yep.
I think I'm not going to say we've, but at least I have experienced that. I venture to say that a lot of people have. Envious, jealous, whatever word you want to use. But the questions are, how do you identify them? What are some of the things you consciously or subconsciously look for regarding these type friends? And can you remain friends with such a person?
Okay.
My first question is, what's wrong with an envious friend? Like,
what's wrong with that? Yeah, what is wrong
with
that?
Wait. I want to go into that a little more because why are we defining people based on an emotion that people experience from time to time? Like, because sometimes I feel like upset or sometimes I get angry. Am I an angry person? Am I like a sad person all the time? But also, like, I'm the first person to admit, like, I have been like that envious friend, you know, like I have seen my friends like successes. And sometimes like, I am that person in my head. I'm like happy for them, but I'm also like, damn, like,
yeah.
How do I get that? You know?
Yeah. So I think, Jonathan, is this coming from like an experience that you've had with a friend or something? Cause like, I don't know where you're going.
I don't want to dive into the experience, but yes, it is.
Okay.
But let's redefine it then. So envy is a natural emotion, right?
Yeah,
but
we're all human beings. We get that.
Yeah, it happens. Like, hey, man, I've been working hard on my physique, but he looks way better than me. Or the girls are more attracted to him or whatever. Mm-hmm. He makes more money. He's got a better car, whatever. Like, that happens. But I think if that emotion is not superseded by good intentions, it drives the relationship in a rocky place, right? So if, as long as you have the core of you is good intentions, that you want the best for that person, it's okay to be jealous or envious that they may have accomplished something well before you have, right? That's natural. But if that envy or jealousy supersedes the good intentions, then you're out to get them. You want to see them fail. You you're
so they're actively trying to make you fail because of their ND versus someone who's
that's different though. See,
yeah, I don't know that that's what envy really leads to. Like, I feel like, like from my experiences with it, like when I've had a friend like envious of me, or I've been envious of somebody else, like really what happens is like it begins to like persist in the relationship. Like it's a topic that comes up over and over, and it's not coming up in like a positive, like congratulatory light. Like, I think when somebody accomplishes something and they're close to you, or even when they're not that close to you, when they're just kind of like in your friend orbit and you know them and you know they're celebrating something, like you want to be able to respond in a way that's like congratulatory, right? Like you're really happy for them. But then like when those emotions start to creep in and you start to kind of become like a negative Nancy, or I don't know what you call it. But you know what I mean? You start asking those questions like, but what about, or like you just start letting little doubts like seep in and like little negative like comments, and it becomes like persistent, and then you know like something's up, right?
So do you keep that friend in that space you just described? Do they stick around? Here's an example. I'll give a slight kind of story here. So I bought a home, my first home, and shared it with a close friend of mine. And I was excited. Right? It was something that, you know, that person and I had talked about as being a pivotal goal. And I was excited to invite them over. Like, hey, this is what I was able to do. And I was expecting an embrace or a, you know, man, happy for you, dog. Like, yo, you did it. I'm not there yet, but you did it first. And I'm proud of you. I'm happy. This is nice area. But when they walked in, it was like, I mean, you know, it's okay. You know, it's, you know.
Wait, they were downplaying it?
Yeah.
It was like
they're like negging you a little.
It was like downplaying it. And the crazy part is the next week, they started looking for a home rigorously, you know, aggressively.
Oh.
And they identified things that my home didn't have. I owned a townhome at that point, and I didn't have a big yard. I didn't have a porch. So they strategically look for things that I didn't have to one up me almost. So I didn't realize in that moment that's what that was until later, but that's kind of what I'm asking. Do you guys subconsciously or consciously? I'm not trying to project either.
It also depends on the relationship, right? So like one thing that happened, right, was like when we were in college, me and Sean had a TV battle. Right, like we're like, oh, I got this TV. Sean's like, oh, you got a TV? I'm gonna get a TV, and his TV was a little better. And I was like, all right, well, I'm gonna go and get my TV a little.
You know, it's a
very like
rivalry,
right? Yeah. And but it wasn't like in a negative way. We were pushing each other, right? It's more like pushing each other.
So that's healthy.
Which is different than what you're talking
about.
Yeah.
If someone comes in is like super neg on me all the time, I kind of just like don't talk to them anymore. Like I keep a positive environment around me, right? Like it's
in my experience that's where we were. We were like, hey, it was almost like a healthy kind of sibling rivalry. Like, hey, I push you, you push me. I get this, you get this, and we just slowly but surely climb this ladder of success. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what that's my vantage point. But I realized that it wasn't from a healthy place. It was an envious place. Like, I want your spot. I want these things that you have, and I want to get them way before you. And I can't celebrate you if you get them faster than I do. Oh. So
that's true.
So, what else does this person bring to the table in terms of like friendship? Like, I think when you're weighing, like, should I keep the friendship or is this like a deal breaker? You really have to consider like really the whole friendship. Like, where have you guys come from? Like. And, you know, you don't want to rely too heavily on the past because that's not bringing you forward, right? Like, really, it's about what's happening now. But, like, can you continue to, like, move in a positive direction? Or is this something that's really shaping your friendship that maybe you need to just take a step back from and explore other friendships or kind of lean on other people for a little while until this topic kind of settles down and then you guys can revisit? Or maybe you guys kind of just drift apart, like.
Yeah, so that's, for me, that's one of those pivotal things, foundational things. If there's envy that is superseded by good intentions, then it's like a prerequisite for me in terms of friendship, right? Because that all ties to loyalty and all these different things, which are foundational components of friendship. So to answer your question, I couldn't continue the friendship regardless of what they provided otherwise. I don't care if they're the smartest person, the best cook, the best advice, if they don't have my best interest at heart, if they can't celebrate me, even if in small wins, I don't want them around me.
So, Jonathan, to your point, though, I've personally experienced something like that myself as well in the past. And you don't realize it until it's a little bit later, right?
Correct. Too late.
It's too late. Correct. But there's nothing you can do to change the past. The only thing you can do is try to be more aware of that. And you're right. At the end of the day, for me, I don't really say, hey, I'm not going to be friends with you. I just part ways. You know what I mean?
Slowly, it's kind of slowly.
Yeah. If this was out. Talking to them. Correct. Yeah. Just, and it happens, though, too, also.
It's
with
just
life,
like
right?
a natural
you
know? Thing. Yeah.
People change. Yeah. People change. Yeah.
But people change. I agree. I don't write them off, say, hey, I hate you for what you did. It's just that people can change. You're right, Michelle. But one of the things is that what Jonathan's trying to say is that I celebrate their wins and their support, right? I would respect the mutual respect as well. Same. That's all it comes down to, right?
Because but the struggle, I think, is this is a different topic. But the struggle I think a lot of us deal with is we expect us from other people, right? So.
Oh, see, that's a mindset, though. See, for me, I don't expect anything in return. I do this. At least personally myself.
No, not a return. I'm saying you put yourself in their shoes looking at you accomplishing things. You're like, well, I would have given her flowers. Yeah. I would have given him a wallet or cologne to support.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
It's how you express care in a friendship.
That's true.
Like very similar to how you express care in a relationship, like people having two different love languages. You hear people talking about that. Like, I think that's very similar in friendships as well. Like, are you guys speaking the same language? Has somebody started speaking a different language now? And
it's that's true.
Also, I have a different perspective on how to go about it. Because if I have a friend like that, I'd be like super spiteful and like go 1,000 times over what they do. Like
harder.
I go so much harder.
Yeah. Me too.
I get like a bigger house. I get a better car. I'd be like, all right, catch up, bitch. That's what I'm
Here's a story. So I showed this particular person. I said, hey, this is the car I want, you know, on my phone. Uh-huh. I said, hey, I've been saving. You know, I'm not there yet, but this is what I want. I'm going to get it, you know. And then 6 months rolled by, and this person pulls up in the car that I showed them.
Oh, dang.
Down to the caliper color. Right? You know, you can paint the caliper color.
Yeah.
So for those that aren't aware, that's something that supports the brakes, like a brake system.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't want to call anybody out, but.
I know. Listen, I know a little bit about cars. I didn't. Oh, you. I don't think you logged on.
Michelle, that was for me.
Right now, okay? Like, I
know. Oh, okay. Okay.
Michelle, that was for me. Like, I don't know what a caliper is. That's what.
It was for Rob. But, so Robert, a few months later, I said, okay, that's cool. I bit that little embarrassment. And then I bought the model that was upgraded from that.
Hey.
So it was in that moment, it was healthy, I thought, but it got to a place where it was
healthy. So Jonathan, let me ask you this though. Maybe that person admires you, to be honest. You never know.
Of course. No, humbly, of course. But
yeah,
I admire people that I'm not envious of. I celebrate those people.
But it's harder because sometimes people have trouble expressing their admiration for somebody other. I'm trying to be like Jonathan, so I'm going to buy the same car. You see what I'm saying? It may not be done on purpose sometimes, but you're right. Some people are aware of it and they do as a negative thing where it kind of hurts
so
you.
Much, so.
No. I get it. I get it. Sometimes people are just trying to show off in a way that, hey, I could be better than that person, right?
Yeah.
No, okay, so here's another example. So I don't know if you're into like shoes and stuff. Say you bought like the Yeezys or whatever.
Yeah.
That was hot right now.
Yep.
And you walk into the room and everybody, oh, those are nice, blah, blah, blah. And that person is there. They realize what you're getting, that attention, that clout, whatever.
That clout.
So they go out and buy the same pair, but a different color, right? That type of stuff is what I'm subconsciously looking for now, given my experience, right?
Oh.
And
I don't know. Like, unless they're doing something to like negatively affect me,
I agree.
I'm not really worried.
I'm not worried about it either. Like, there's a difference between like going out and buying like a different color of the same shoe, and you guys being like, check it out, we got the same shoes. What?
Yeah.
But
then
you know them shitting on your shoe after they
buy
their.
That's true.
It's more like if say like I'm like, oh, this is the job I want, and I'm like, oh, I'm gonna go do this job, and then they're like, oh, he's almost got the job. He's got like an on-site. I'm gonna call him up and tell them, oh, this guy's shit. He can't do the work. And then mess with you, right? I think that's different. where like that envy leads to something worse for me, I would, that would be like something that I would be looking for, rather than like if they're copying me, like that's the highest form of praise, right?
Respect. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. So Jonathan, like, something really funny. Me, Sam, and my friend John, we had the same pair of shoes.
did you get the 2019, 2020 version, 2021 version?
They're all the same exact year, same exact model, same exact color.
And like unintentionally?
No, no, purposely. Because
that's friendship.
That's friendship. Yeah.
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 So wait, let me ask you something. It sounds like he really admires you. Like, are there things about him that you admire?
Oh yeah, and I celebrated him in that moment, like in those moments, in those perspectives, in those umbrellas of life.
Yeah,
okay.
I acknowledge, hey, you're better at me than this. Hey, I wouldn't have made it through this process without you.
Yeah. But has he hurt you negatively? Just wondering.
I think like the problem.
That's the problem.
I didn't share all the details, but yeah.
I got one more question. This is it. I promise. So with you, because I very much am the kind of person that like would want to like speak up and let somebody know when I felt like I've been hurt, you know, or like something has bothered me. So like, have you considered talking to him about this and just being open and like letting him know, like, hey, like I noticed you came over and I didn't really feel. I know this is kind of a hard ask for some guys.
We're guys though. We don't talk.
I know. That's why I'm saying it's hard for some guys.
When we're the most bothered, we're the most quiet.
That's true. 100% agree.
It's a flaw in our design. We don't communicate as well as you all, or at least most women. So we'll harbor a lot of things, and we'll make sometimes accurate or inaccurate perceptions about how people have navigated in our lives, and we make decisions based on that. And say, hey, Robert was supposed to bring, you know, Hennessy. He promised me to bring Hennessy to the podcast. He brought rosé, so I don't mess with him.
My bad. I can go get some Hennessy.
Bring the whole bar cart over.
Yeah, I got a whole cart over here. If you want some, man, I didn't know that was part of the deal.
Yeah, that's prerequisites to friendship, sir.
Oh, so. Damn! All right, well, let me go switch off to something else. I think it has to do with like the whole body of friendship, right? And a lot of the people that if they come over, like if that happened to me, where like they came over and they didn't have any good things to say or anything, like I kind of just would like naturally stop talking to them, like slowly, just like I wouldn't bring up any more successes, because it's hard to like you bring up successes to be like, oh, we can celebrate together, and they're not celebrating with you, like.
That's, I know, but some successes you don't have to bring up. They're visible just in your life.
That's true. They are visible. That's true. And you think, you will think that they will have the natural best intent for you because you celebrate their success, they will do the same thing for you. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like they're hurting you negatively, which I very dislike in a sense. And you're right. I think at that point that there is no point of wasting more time to keep that friendship. I value my time a lot more than before, and I tend to do that a lot. You know, I'm more conscious of it, just like you are, Jonathan. I'm more conscious about it too as well. So
yeah. So
that's a tough call. You know,
it is like, a tough call though.
Friendship
is
hard. Like I had a really good friend who like our friendship ended up in flames. And this was like about a year ago, and it was not pretty. And to me, it was like such a violation of trust. Like it was so hurtful. It was almost like a breakup, like a bad breakup. So that can be really challenging.
True though, and I think every case will vary, right? I mean, it sounds like you know what you're doing, Jonathan, with your case, but also at the same time, Michelle, you do have a point though, because I tend to think the good of people do change, and so but if they're not aware what they're doing, or you know, they're not, or I let them, at least I will let them know, hey, I'm straightforward, hey, this is what you're doing, I don't feel like we're gelling or whatever it is, and then I tend to like back away from it. But if they recognize that and they apologize from that behavior, that's a different story, though.
Depends on the relationship. I don't really talk to people like that.
That's true. Me neither. Like I said, the closer the relationship is, the more I'll talk to them about it. Mm-hmm. But
Robert's a ghoster. He'll just ghost.
Like, it's not ghost. It's just like I won't. Like you're not on the top of my mind of someone I bring stuff up to, right? So that you slowly fade away.
Yeah. Now that's a skill you and I both have. We share in common is the ability to literally, mentally erase someone, right? Where they no longer cross your path. And that's, it's a very dangerous skill.
And sometimes it's not even on purpose. It's like, yeah.
Sometimes it's just like,
if I see you every day, then like you're on the top of my mind. If you're not, like it's hard to like just think outside of my bubble that I'm in.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're cold-hearted sometimes, you guys.
That's probably what it is, really.
All right, well, hopefully, Jonathan, we were able to help you out think differently at least a little bit. Yeah. You know, share our view, though, on that. But, all right, pivoting, Robert, kick off your topic. I think you have a different interesting topic.
Okay, so I sent the link over to you guys. I'm going to share the screen mm-hmm. here. Mm-hmm. So HBO Max sent out an email, like a month ago, maybe, and all it said in the email was test to all of their HBO Max subscribers. So I got this email. I didn't think anything of it when it happened. But recently I went like on Twitter, like they have the, or on Reddit, they showed this tweet where like HBO says that, oh, this empty test email was a mistake and it was done by an intern. And then the comments on this was so wholesome. Where like everybody's just like explaining like, oh, I did this once when I was an intern or like my first job or something. Don't worry, intern, you're gonna be fine. And like everyone was very supportive. And I was like, man, this is such a wholesome thing. And I wanted to get the panel's opinion and like, what was something that y'all did in y'all's career? Or like maybe not even career-wise, where like you messed up really bad, but like that you would like tell this intern, oh, it's all gonna be work out soon. Right. Yeah. You guys want to start or you want me to start? I have one already.
Go ahead. You start. Go ahead.
I was at like my first job, I was at Merrill Lynch. I worked in like dividend operations. So basically we paid out all the dividends to all these stockholders that had certain stuff. Right. And there was one that was like a Japanese company. I don't even remember the company, but it's like a huge bank. Right. And they have hundreds of thousands of dollars going out every time they do any type of dividend, which is like quarterly. But there's a FX rate difference. And JPY to USD is thousands of dollar difference, right? And I flipped the FX rate. So we basically, if it had gone out, it would have paid out like $1 trillion. It made it to the news, like Bloomberg or whatever had it on the news. And I was like, oh, shoot. Luckily, our system couldn't handle the numbers to pay out $1 trillion, and it stopped it. Otherwise, it would have been really bad.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, so, but, you know, learning experience. Awesome. Hopefully, your company is has system inefficiencies that don't let them pay out crazy amounts of money to people.
Robert, what did your boss say about that? I just wonder if you make a mistake. How did he handle that?
So we were dealing with Asia Pac. So we were transitioning from Asia Pac over to the US. Mm-hmm. And so the Asia Pac team found it that night. So that they were checking our stuff. It was still a transition period. So they were still checking all of our stuff. Okay. And so they checked it that night and they were like, oh, there's an issue. And they called me at like 1 a.m. or something, and they're like, hey, this is going on, we need to fix this. And then they like got it, and then I came into my boss's office the next day, and I was like super depressed because I was like, this is my first mistake, like I've never made a mistake like this before. And he's like, bro, it's fine, just chill out, you're good, nothing bad happened, we reversed it, it's fine. And then it'll be all right. So he was very supportive, but it, like, I know if it had gone to his boss, then I probably would have gotten an earful of profanities and stuff, but it was okay. It ended
That's
up
good,
fine.
Though. So at least he was very positive about that, though.
Yeah, yeah.
So you kept your internship?
That was my first job.
My first job,
yeah. So I still got through.
Did it ever come up again later, or was it just...
No. You don't do that again. You don't do that again.
I never did that again. Yeah.
No, but like, did anybody ever bring it up? Like, any of your higher ups ever, like, in like a review, be like, "Hey,
jokingly."
No, I don't think. I think after that day, everyone just forgot it. Like, it was just like, there's so much stuff going on. They're just like, all right, whatever. No, it didn't actually affect the business, so we don't really care. That's what happened.
Nice.
So, you know. I mean, I have two sides of the story where I also had an intern that worked under me, and then I was an intern and I made mistakes too. Actually, Jonathan, this was at Disney. And so my first time being a PM at Disney, and I think they do this purposely where they try to push you how much can you do on your own and let you make the mistakes, because it's not like they had the budget for it. So I think for one of the scope of the project, I tend to not go into too much detail where I did not, let's say, fulfill the requirements, and I took the wrong requirements down. And I had to go back to the contractor, hey guys, we need to fix this. And the contractor, well, you know, to fix this, it's gonna cost you this much. I'm like, crap, I have to go back now, ask for more money for this project. And as an intern, I'm like, shit, I'm not gonna get called back for this internship again. You know, because the cost of the project was more than my salary. Let's just say, wow. Okay?
And the cost of most projects are more than
Yeah. Sounded good.
So I went, the guy that I'm still friends with, he's a good mentor of mine, like, in a sense. Like, I asked him, hey, how can I get more money out of this? He's like, oh, let me do this one thing for you. Move some fundings over, you're done. Go ahead, go.
Oh.
I was crapping my pants, worried about this whole thing the night before. And I was like, try to prepare my speeches and I'm sorry, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, but the guy,
ready.
So, yeah, I got my emails ready and everything. Seriously, my explanation, he's like, don't worry about it. I don't want to hear it. Just get it done and make sure it's online, on time. He's like, make sure it's on time. That's all you care about. So apparently they have conditions and plans, which I never knew as an intern. And I think they purposely don't tell you that because make sure, you know, oh, they don't want to make you think screwing up's okay.
Yeah.
So with that aspect of that, for me, you know, I mean, that's something that, you know, seeing this positive enforcement from the community who don't know that person, that's great. And it's, you know, everybody has their own story, right?
Yeah.
And so
that's how it should be, honestly. Like, as a teacher, like, when I'm with the kids in the classroom and they make a mistake, like, for example, they spill their water bottle or they drop all their crayons all over the floor, like, the first thing they do is look at me like, and I'm like, okay, what are we gonna do to fix it? Like, it's okay, let's get some paper towels, or like, here, let me help you, like, we can do this together. Like, it's so important for people to know that, like, it's so natural to make mistakes. And, like, that is how we learn, like, naturally. So, like, the fact that there's so much, like, shame around it, or, like, such a need to be perfect. Like, I am, like, self-admitted perfectionist, and, like, I make mistakes all the time. But I am able to recognize that, like, the mistakes don't define me, and they're not, like, irreparable, like, causing irreparable harm. Like, I just move on and I try to do better and it's okay. But, like, yeah, there's a lot of shame around, like, making errors and, like, being human that I take issue with.
But I
make mistakes all the time. Like, I have to work with a whole new set of families and students every year. And, like, it's impossible not to make a mistake. Like, I'm doing a camp right now, and I have a bunch of kids in my class for a very short amount of time. Like, it's on a week to week basis. So, like, some of the kids return after week one, some of them come back week three. Like, you know, they're kind of like going in and out, and I have to, like, develop a relationship with the families in a short amount of time and communicate little things with them. And, like, one of the kids, his name's Joaquin, and I was dropping him off at the car one day, and his dad was like, oh yeah, Waco. And I was like, Waco! I love that. And then I proceeded to call him Waka. I put, like, the feminine A at the end for, like, a whole week. And his parents, like, they didn't say anything, but I remember being like, oh, like, we did a little dance party. We were singing, like, his song. I was telling him, waka, waka, eh, eh. And his dad was like, oh, yeah, Waco. And, like, I think that was his way of being like, it's Waco, not Waka. And I was like, yeah, I've been calling him Waka for a week. Like, you know, it's like little, you know, no mistakes are so crazy that, I mean, maybe some of them are. But most mistakes are not so crazy that you're going to lose your job over it. You know what I mean? Like, things happen.
And even, you know, if you lose your job, like, you can go find another job, like, for the most part, unless you've done some, like,
shady stuff. Yeah. Listen, I mean, we are human beings. We'll learn. I mean, hopefully we'll learn to learn from our mistakes. But I think having that positive reinforcement is much better off than having that negative reinforcement, because you could have gone the other way around, right? Where even my story, where like he's like, yeah, you're gonna be, that project assistant manager could have told me, hey, you're gonna be in shit trouble, you know, you're gonna be in this, blah, 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 in the doggy house. Like, and it just, now you're more scared to do things now. Instead of trying to go out all out again and try to, you know, be the best of yourself, worry about, you know, failing, right? So it's like for me, so I've been doing improv classes for the last 6 months. I'm not funny. And I tend to do, I admit that.
I think you're funny, Juan.
funny looking maybe, but you know, but listen, I know my own self-awareness, but the reason why I'm doing improv is for me to get out of my own comfort zone, be able to control my speech, be able to control certain things, and be able to react to it, because it has to be on the spot and I have to not think about it. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason why I'm doing it. But I enjoy the classes, but they made it such a safe environment where, listen, just be you or go or be another character in an extreme. Just go all out because you're here already. You might as well just throw all out. And it's okay to fail. We'll clap for you if you screwed up. They actually literally clap for you every time you screwed up. And so
I think that helps from an improv helps from an emotional display for you. But I think you're very good at being able to come up with answers on the spot, right? Like the impromptu type stuff. Like, you've answered questions so like intelligently that you had no clue they were coming to you. I think that's a skill, but the emotional piece, I think, is an opportunity where
improve on. Yeah.
Yeah, because you're I'm not gonna say hardened, but you're hard to gauge emotionally how you feel.
I have no emotions. I'm Asian, okay?
Yeah. So. Yeah, like if you make a mistake, or if your feelings hurt, you're like, oh shit, okay, well, let's move on. And it could have hurt you dearly, but that's we don't true. Know that.
Surfacely yeah. wise, you're right, 100% agree. I keep it together. That's the thing, though. Also, as part of, but it's also part of this, how I grew up, because, you know, emotionally, I did struggle trying to express my emotions, especially in relationship wise as well. But as we get older, we tend to be better at it. And I mean, especially in the Asian culture, we don't talk about emotion. I think one of the episodes we talked about earlier, we just don't express ourselves as much.
You know what's funny is like my parents would be like reprimanding me. They'd be spanking me, right? And then they're like, "If you cry, we're gonna spank you more."
That's true.
And so,
I'll give you a reason to cry.
Like, no, crying. Like, what? You're crying. I'm gonna beat you more. I was like, oh my god, like that's repressing emotions that are coming out that naturally. Like, you can't even stop that. Right? And they're like, oh god.
Is that a gender thing though? Was it the same for like a female or?
No, I definitely experienced that. Like, I naturally am a very like sensitive and like emotional person, and my mom like could not relate. And whenever I would be feeling like a certain way, her response was very like curt, like not very empathetic, and like I was kind of like shamed for like having emotions. So it affects how you.
Are you a dominant in a relationship? Then? Are you a dominant young lady?
To speak out more. Yeah, I guess I can be dominant in a relationship.
So you're not as submissive, is that fair to say?
I mean, I'll say I'm like laid back about certain things, but like submissive, I wouldn't necessarily define myself as like submissive.
So I think, Jonathan, I think what you're trying to get to is that everybody has different personality on how they grew up in. And not only that, everybody has different EQ. Keep that in mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I think that matters. That matters a lot. So my EQ evolved as, you know, I got more mature, started, you know, learning things. And I think also part of it is that right now with improv, I realized, okay, I need to tap into certain emotions in order to get that reaction that I want out of it. And you're right. I don't have that little the facial expression motion, but now I'm trying to slowly become better at it because I need to tap that in order to actually deliver like. One of my current professors like, hey, be angry, like show me angry. Listen, that's not angry. That's you just pretending to be angry. Like tap into that feeling and be angry. And I'm like, well, I don't get angry very often. I get annoyed.
doesn't that compound though? Like you
it does compound. To, yeah.
Like suppress those emotions and don't handle them in that moment. They just like compound and compound and compound. And it'd be bad. Hopefully that happened where there's a pivotal moment in your life and all that stuff just surfaces.
Yeah.
You know?
No, of course. And it has before. And that's why I decided to take the class. No, seriously, because that's how I got burned out before, right? And that happens. And that's just why I decided to take improv classes because I think this helps it express it.
Yeah. I mean, that's one way to do it. Like, I do therapy, so.
That's another way to do it. There we go.
I know how to do therapy.
Yeah. See, I wish I could do therapy. I just don't have to. I guess I don't trust people that well. Sometimes it's hard to not. I mean, but also it's hard to find a good therapist. How do you know someone's good or not? That's the thing.
If it works for you,
you have to go out and risk it. You know, you gotta risk it for the biscuit, my guy. Like,
there we go. There we go. That's a good one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean. But anyway, so pivoting to a different topic, I think this.
Wait, we didn't get Jonathan's.
Oh, that's true. That's true, Jonathan's.
Oh, what?
Could you give an example of something that happened to you?
Intern.
That as an intern or like in a job where like you messed up.
Jonathan, you messed up. I know that plenty of time.
Let me think this through. As an intern or a regular job?
I mean, either way. Like mine was a regular job. Like I was.
Yeah.
I was getting paid, and they could have fired me easily.
Hey, let me think about that. I was hoping you guys would skip me. Like, I mean, I've obviously made mistakes, you know. But I don't know why I can't. Nothing's coming to mind.
All right, that's cool. We can move on. That's fine.
Share it later.
Yeah, right. We'll come back.
Okay, so
I'll put it in the chat.
All right, no worries. So we have one time for one more topic. I think, Jonathan, you do have a second topic that I actually found it very intriguing. You want to bring that up because I feel like this is kind of related to what we just talked about a little bit, maturity wise.
Yeah, so maturation or maturity is the topic. And the questions are, what's something you learn later in life that you would have wanted to learn much earlier? How would things be different today if you did? Last question is, do you or will you incorporate those lessons in the upbringing of your children / younger family? So I don't know if
you've ever had. Jonathan, you should start first. It's your topic first.
Deep,
Jonathan, you start first if this is your topic. So
I don't know. It's a weird one. I think that like in later in life I learned that you gotta understand what makes you happy, right? And I think we're guided in directions based on upbringing, and that may not really fully align with what your interests are or what fulfills you. So I'm big on fulfillment, peace, and happiness. And I didn't learn that till later. I wanted to kind of go in a route that I was pushed in because that was kind of tried and true. Whatever that looks like, hey, this is going to work for you. It's going to make you successful. You got to be an engineer. Okay, you got to do that. Honestly, I don't really like engineering, but I'm in the engineering field. And I was told that it creates a place of opportunity that other things may not. Right. And it didn't matter at that point if that aligned with my interests or fulfillment. So I think if I were in a position to look at my younger self, I would prioritize fulfillment over anything monetary or any accomplishments from a professional standpoint. Because ultimately, you could be, it doesn't matter how much money you make or how many accolades you get, if you're not fulfilled or happy or at peace with who you are or who you're becoming as a person, then it still leads to misery. I've met multi millionaires, and the guy actually this weekend he came up to me, multi millionaire. He says, "Man, I would pay to have your physique, man. I would all the money that I have, I would pay to have the health that you have." He said, "You know what? I have to get women off this Rolex, right? That's what I have to get women. That's what attracts the women." He said, "But I'll give it all up for just to be healthy, not to have blood pressure medicine, or not have to deal with these, ailments." And that really resonated with me. He has way more resources than I do, but that's how I prioritize my life now around happiness, fulfillment, and peace. So if I could look back at the 18-year-old Jonathan, I would say, hey, go for your dreams. If hopefully it aligns with something monetary, but at the very least, you know that you're fulfilled in your life.
So let me ask you this though. At the age of 18, did you know what your dream was or what fulfilled you? Just wondering.
But you suppress it. I think kind of like you emotionally, right? You suppress it based on what you're told and what society tells you success looks like. They say you got to be engineer, lawyer, doctor, whatever, right? You're the top tier people, and that's not necessarily the case. Like I said, a lot of folks that are in those professions are tied to monetary success sometimes, but they're not fulfilled. They're like, oh man, I gotta go to the hospital again. I'm tired of dealing with these patients. I'd rather be a teacher. I'd rather be
a daycare assistant or whatever that looks like, right? Because I'm imagining Michelle has at least some form of passion to the upbringing of the next generation, to instill values in them, to see them cry and overcome those emotions and stuff like that, right? That I respect that so much more than the other stuff. But the 18-year-old me was like, I'm not being a teacher. Like, why would I do that?
There's no money there. That's it.
That's what the perception is for some people. And, well, I hope, hopefully I'm not offending you, Michelle. I'm just being honest.
No, not at all.
Well, actually, Jonathan, let me ask you this. So, well, a lot of people tend to make their success monetary first, and then they can feel whatever, find out whatever they want later on because they have the monetary to do that, right? And you're right. So people, just once they go through that route, they thought money make them happy, but it didn't. That was the, but once they had the money, they had the time and the freedom to find that later on. And so,
so I think that's where parenting comes in.
Yeah,
that you set your children up for success so that they don't have to make monetary benefits their priority.
Right. Correct.
If I have a nice setup for my children, they can say, "Hey, I got a few dollars in the bank. I could become an artist. I could really pursue the music industry." And a lot of times, we've mentioned or we've heard in recent past around the term starving artist, right? That may be the case for that person, your child initially, but like, hey, my dad set me up, but at least I know this is what I really care about. I really care about sculptures. And that may not lead to monetary things initially, but it could be something they build upon. So I think that's where it comes, right? If you're not setting your children up for that fulfillment, then the cycle continues of looking for the monetary foundation first, and it doesn't lead to happiness.
So let me pivot this to my answer to your question, and I'll pivot to Michelle, because I feel like you might have a good answer for this as well, in a sense, because it's not, your career is different from my career. So for me, I was more worried about, because I'm first generation graduate, going to college, high school, and everything. My parents migrated for two different countries. So I wanted to make sure that I did not disappoint them by picking a crappy career that they think I went to college just because whatever it was. So that was in the back of my mind. But you're right. I didn't put my own happiness in a sense of success in the beginning when I was younger.
You couldn't.
I couldn't, right? But my parents were a little bit positive about it. We're like, hey, just do whatever you want to do in a sense, but make sure you're successful at it. So they did push me to that route. But deep down in my mind, though, because my parents were like, when they give me compliments, they compare it to somebody else's. And they're technically not compliments. They're just comparing to somebody else's. Okay?
That's exactly what
happens to Asian parents, okay? That's just how it is. Like, oh, so Jimmy did this, and did blah, blah, blah. All right, okay, cool. All right, I know what you're
doing. And it's not even like people you know. It's like, my friend's cousin's brother is like a pharmacist now. He's doing great. Yeah. And you're like, okay.
Yeah, but what do you want? But you can do whatever you want, though, right? And I'm like, are you trying to say something to me right now? Trying to deliver different messages, So, but deep down though, I wanted to make sure that at least, okay, you know what? I'm gonna take this engineering route because I studied science and math the whole my entire life. I'm gonna stuck with it because I don't give up anything. But I, deep down, I already knew that by the time I finished my internship, I did not want to do engineering. I just need to figure out how to pivot my career because I'm good at solving problems. I have good analytical skills. What is my next set of career?
Project management.
Well, I'm a good consultant. That's what happened.
Yeah.
My parents still today don't know what I do for a living, but at least they see me that, okay, I'm maintaining myself. I'm self-sustainable, blah, 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 blah. I have a house, all this stuff. So they're happy for me. But to answer your question, if I were to go back and, tell myself, 18 years old, hey, just go for it. Literally just skip engineering, literally, and you're going to be fine, but just trust yourself that you will have the skill set to, that you're not going to fail, right, in a sense. Because ultimately, it comes down to a lot of self-esteem. And it really does. And just that parenting does help. And having that safe blanket, hey, don't worry about money, Just do what you do, do what you love, you'll be okay. So a lot of people go to college is to find themselves, to find what they want. But if you know what you want, 18 years old, to start a business, I would rather start a business than go to college. Or because especially you know what you want, you're chasing for. A lot of athletes does that because they know they want to play basketball forever. And at least for the next 20 years, so they're chasing that. They skip college or they go to high, or they play 1 year college and they go pro. But at least they're chasing what they want. But a lot of them, when they chase what they want, but they have poor background, but they still do it. And I admire for that because they're going all in, literally. the back is against the wall, and they have no choice but to succeed. Sometimes you may need that though. But I wish I had that mindset before though. So.
Yeah, but society is just so weird. Like
correct, society is just so weird because at the end of the day, what I consider successful back then is different now because when I was going to college, I was looking at a lot of people. Oh wow, this guy got an amazing corporate job, got a car, got a family, got a big giant house, and you know all the stuff like that. But then now, I realized, you know, actually, well, 7 years ago, I realized, you know what, time is, I feel like time is finite. So I'd rather get my time back to do whatever I want, but you need money to do that in a sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and it kind of goes hand in hand, but I realized my own time is more valuable. So now every year that goes by, I value that a lot more and a lot more. And going back to your perspectives that I try to value my own happiness, my own perspective a lot more now than before. So.
Yeah, and like you chose a route that was tried and true, like me, engineering, at least what society tells us.
Yeah.
And it didn't fulfill you fully. You wanted to be
It's a safe space.
But the reality is, and I've noticed this, that if you get in different spaces, if you just throw that word out there, it puts you in a place that kind of puts you in the front of the line. And it's not fair. I don't feel I'm any smarter than anybody else or any more capable, right? But if I throw that word out there, society, even in that whatever social space I'm in, that I get the respect that I may or may not deserve, right? If sometimes they don't even question it. You just throw the engineering out. They don't ask what discipline or what field. They say, don't touch that. Okay, good job. Next person, you know?
It's the doctor, right? Everybody think a doctor is good. No, they're not good. Personally, right now, I'm experiencing that. There are some very dumb people out there that are in those professions.
Yes, yes.
And it annoys the hell out of me, too. Yeah,
but maybe you could just use that as leverage so that for your whatever you want to do. And then you have the respect. You can go get whatever you want. Like you just take advantage of it.
Michelle, what do you think about this?
So yeah, you guys are like touching on a lot of like interesting points. And like the first thing that like I think about is like, you know, my journey as a teacher and like what is success, you know, to a teacher when like you're not necessarily valued by society in like ways that allow you to live like a very fulfilling and like, you know, you're not compensated fairly, like to put it bluntly, you know? So like there's a lot of like definitions of success like culturally and socially that I don't really align myself with anymore, and that took me a long time to accept, like accepting that I wasn't going to be able to be that person that was going to be able to go like to yacht week 1 year and like Dubai to the next year, like not trying to throw any shade, but like, I can't find that for myself, you know, like I can't. And there are people who can, and that's great. You know, like I have to be content with like a different type of happiness. And I really, like, I grew up in a household, like raised by a very strong single mom who emphasized like always being independent and like always being able to provide for myself. So like, I've reached a point where I can do that like comfortably. I'm working at a school that I absolutely love and am committed to, and I'm very grateful for that. But success doesn't have to look the same for everybody, and like especially like being a teacher, there's so many women who, you know, get engaged at like 30 and start popping kids in their 30s, and like I feel like I'm not necessarily meeting that timeline, and like, I'm okay with that. Like, I don't have to, you know, have kids. Like, I'm very open to like maybe not having kids or adopting kids, you know, like I'm very open to like my life and what it might look like. And I try not to have expectations of myself, especially when they align to like people around me and like the things that they're experiencing, because it might not look the same for me. And like, that's okay, you know, and like, I guess it took me a long time to be able to accept that I'm different from a lot of the people. You know, like I very much believe like your network is your net worth. Like I try to associate with people who like bring me up and you know, that means not always being around other teachers. Like, I love my teacher friends, like, don't get me wrong, but I have other friends too. And it's just different, you know, and I'm okay with that. Like, I have like more faith, I guess, in like the universe and the, like, that I'm going to be okay.
But
let me just interject if I could, Mike.
Go ahead.
And it hopefully gives you some sense of satisfaction, Michelle. Like, when I remember graduating from college and my mom said, hey, I want you to write down 5 people that had the most impact in your life or things you were able to accomplish. And 2 or 3 of those folks were elementary school teachers, right? Right. The engagement that they, the investment that they gave to me was so impactful, even as a 22-year-old, a young man. I remember that, right? So I remember Miss Liuza, I remember Miss Duval, I remember her, you know, and those guys and gals being invested in just my development and understanding and really caring about my life. And I felt that in that space and I really needed it. So if it gives you any satisfaction, regardless of some of the things that your profession doesn't provide, you know that you're putting a spin on people's lives that is impactful and lasting. Lifelong, they'll tell their children about you.
You may not see that.
You don't see it now.
Yeah. You don't see it now. You don't see the benefits now. But those little kindergarten, first grade, elementary school age folks are going to remember you forever, and they're going to say, when they take their kids to school, I remember, you know, Miss Michelle. She was so cool. She did the same thing to me. We painted the same thing.
Yeah.
Wow. You know.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful thing. I respect it.
Thank you. I recognize that I'm in a position of like great like privilege to be able to impact like young humans, you know, and like spend a whole year with them, like a whole 9 months with them, and like I do love seeing them grow, like in my school, like seeing even just like passing them in the hallways, like I make connections with their parents and like we stay in touch and I hear about how they're growing. Like, it really is an amazing thing. But for like, there have been moments in my career where I'm like, I don't know, you know, like, I don't know if I can do this, you know. It's been a journey to like accept, you know, that like this is what I've picked, like this is, I really do love it, and it does have hard moments, and I'm not, you know, my value as like a person is not determined by the salary that I have, like. And it's not determined, you know, by my challenges, or, you know, it's determined by my like ability to overcome those. So
we have our next episode actually is about success, like one that's coming out tomorrow is is actually about success, and we go through like different types of success and how that has changed in our evolution, like as we've gone
our
through
generation
life,
too. Yeah.
Like as we've gone through life, how it's changed and everything, and it's interesting to understand, because we talked about like, what is it, like 7 or 8 different types of success.
And how do you rank them priority wise?
And how do you rank them? And like, I feel like your priority ranking is different than what I at least was growing up, like what I had. And even now, like that, things have changed and your priorities are still like more impactful than like what my success rankings are.
So there are like a couple, you know, different types of success: monetary, career-wise, family, relationship, actually impact, community.
Impact is one, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of them. And so like, it seems like you rank your definition of success differently than ours. And so, and I think it does vary per profession. That's 100% sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, adding to what Jonathan was trying to say, like, at the end of the day, for me, the biggest impact, it was my high school teacher. And that's the reason why I decided, you know what, I'm gonna go engineering degree, because this guy has spent so much time to introduce science and math to everybody, but especially to me, but because he made it live for me. I actually enjoy doing it, right? And so I want to see it through. But he was also my chemistry teacher, he was also my physics teacher, but he see me, you know, grew from as a person. So he was able to put me in a position where I could actually develop as a leader as well. So I became his TA. So like, he gave me that kind of opportunity. So if it wasn't because of him going to college, I don't think I would have the confidence to do whatever I had to do in college, to get involved, things like that. So
yeah.
That's amazing. That's so cool. What a jack of all trades, man. He really knew his stuff.
But he did. He definitely did. And he's still teaching there right now today. So
super cool.
Yeah. When I think about this question, right, like, I have a little different, like, I agree with all of you guys, like, you probably, I don't know, like, the way we grew up, like, if we knew what we were going to do now versus, like, what we, like, then, like, definitely would have changed, like, the path that I would have taken through college and through everything. But for me, I think the most impactful thing is like travel, right? Like, I would tell myself to go travel. I would tell anybody who's out there to go out and, like, see the world, because you get a different perspective of how other people live and how life is outside of your little bubble. I grew up, like, born and raised in Florida. Like, I knew nothing other than Florida. And, like, my first job, they sent me to Singapore for 3 weeks, and it changed my life. Like, I was like, oh my God, everything here is different. Wow. Everyone looks like me. I'm regular height there. Like, that's that's one thing. I was like, man, maybe there's places where I'm regular height, right? And then there's
5'5".
Yeah, 5'5" is, like, normal height. I might be a little tall over there, right? Like, it's how it is, right? So it's and then just, like, seeing how they live and, like, how different cultures take in stuff, like, it's interesting, and you need to go experience that, like, in person, and get out of, like, your little bubble of where you're at. Yeah. And that's like my top thing that I would tell anybody, like, or tell my younger self, or tell any of the younger, like, younger generation, like, go travel, go see the world, because you'll grow.
I think in Europe, there's a lot of people take a year off between high school and college. Before they go to college, they spend a year traveling. It's kind of also within high school, they encourage people to do study abroad, actually, to get that different perspective, because it makes you appreciate a lot of things that you may have today that other people don't have as well. And, you know, going to Robert's point, I feel like for me, after college, I made it a purpose, like, you know what, I'm going to try to see one country every single year that's differently. And because I already kind of knew that when studying abroad for a little bit in Czech Republic, I was like, you know what, wow, there's a lot of things that I don't know about, especially when I travel by myself. I just, even if it's for 2 weeks, right, or even if it's for a week, pick one country that you've never been up and just explore. Yes, you may not be able to afford it, but you know what, at least have a goal. And be that a priority to learn. But also, obviously, everyone has different priority. For me, it was more about self, you know, try to create the self-awareness to learn a bit more about myself more. So I made that as a huge priority for the last 7-8 years. So,
yeah. I love that. I actually, like, that was something that my mom also really impressed in me, was, like, it's travel. She was born in Chile, and she met my father in Israel. Like, they had both been in Israel, and he was American, so that's how I ended up in Florida. But I ended up doing study abroad as well. Did you guys hear that?
Yeah.
Oh, my bad. So I studied abroad in Spain, and I did, like, a month and a half there. And, like, since then, like, whenever I travel, like, I really want to be, like, immersed in the culture and, like, really live the way that the people live there. And, like, I have such fond memories of Spain because, like, I really was blended in. Like, people did not know I was not, like, Spanish, that I was, like, Chilean. Like, I really picked it up very nicely. And then, you know, I spent, like, a couple weeks in Israel too. Like, I ended up doing Birthright, and that also was, like, an amazing experience. And just, like, living, like, an Israeli, like, it was,
that's awesome, really cool. Though.
Yeah. So I highly, like I agree. Like, I think that's something that's so important in, like, shaping who you are and, like, building tolerance too, like, tolerance of other people, of things that are different, like, valuing that, you know, like valuing diversity. That's so important.
Yeah, growing up, I didn't have that. Like, my parents, we went on the same trip to DC, like, every year. For, like, a long time, like, the same trip. We had friends there, and my dad was like, "All right, let's go there." And, like, after my parents got divorced, my mom started traveling around more. She's like, "Oh my God, there's so much just even in Florida that we never went to, because we didn't want to get outside of our bubble." Like, and so like it was a, like, different experience that I had to learn myself, like, just through life.
Yeah, yeah. We tend to literally live in a bubble because it's easy and it's comfortable. And it's, I mean, and sometimes, I mean, it's done by choice, but a lot of people sometimes they're afraid of change. And that's probably, as how, like you said, Jonathan, as how they grew up, right? like, there's one thing that I want to incorporate to my kids, you know, later on down the line, is that I want to encourage them to travel, because I feel like they're going to learn a lot about themselves more than we can teach them.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And there's some things that they have to learn on their own.
Yeah. It can't really be taught like in a classroom or like through a conversation. Yeah. You just have to like go and experience it on your own.
People seek that experience. Yeah.
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 It's amazing.
All right. So we're going to wrap this episode up with our extra MG session, funny session. So we're going to kick it off. I'm going to kick it off with Mike quickly because mine's very quick, and then we'll kick it up to Michelle and Jonathan and Robert, okay? So with mine, it's a little, funny little images. And some of you may have seen it on Reddit, but just in case you haven't, this was an image that I saw on Reddit, and I've seen it multiple times throughout COVID. And it still keep popping up now and days. So I want to bring this back because I'm like, after a year of COVID, how do people keep making this mistake, you know?
Oh, God.
And so check this out. So click on this Reddit post. And for those who are listening on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, it's an image of a bottle, okay? The title says Mistakes Were Made. And it's pretty much it's a giant bottle next to the soda machine. It says instant hand sanitizer gel. And someone had to label this not ranch with a little face on it. And I'm like, wow, people still making this kind of mistake after a year of COVID?
How do you know this wasn't like at the beginning of COVID even at the beginning, I would not have done this, but.
I mean, this was posted 16 hours ago. I will hope, they don't wait a year to post this video, to post this image, you know?
I mean,
my God.
Maybe they had to do it like when the COVID started and they never changed the bottle.
My question is actually, how many people make this mistake for them to put this label on?
the comment, Hidden Valley Ranch.
No, I love Reddit because like the posts can be really good, but the comments are always where the wins are at. Like, that's always where the lols are. Forbidden Ranch.
Anyway, I'm just saying, it's been a year of COVID. I'm like, how can you still making this that mistake? That's all. But yeah.
Somebody says, where would they have a pump of ranch just chilling on the counter?
Like, yeah, like I've never seen even like, I don't know many restaurants that have like a huge thing of ranch just for you to like get as much as you want.
Actually, Pollo
Tropical. You make jugs of ketchup and mustard. Pollo
Tropical?
Yeah, Pollo Tropical.
Oh.
The sauces, remember Pollo Tropical, you pump them up?
Oh, yes.
Do you think this is also at Pollo?
No, I'm not sure. It's just, but
this, it looks like, there's like slushies in the background.
Yeah.
What could that possibly be? Like a fat Tuesday?
I know, right? You have slushies and you have ranch. Like, where are you putting the ranch on?
A gas station. It has to be a gas station.
Oh, that should be a gas station.
Gotta be a gas station. Imagine the clientele. Like, it's gotta be a gas station in like the middle of nowhere.
That's true. Easily a 7-Eleven. It could be. You never know.
Michelle's a Sherlock Holmes here. She's got
All right, yeah, Michelle, what's your funny thing or story you have today?
My God. Okay. This is like a story / like beware for anybody who's trying to plan a destination wedding. So I have a really good friend from high school who just got married in St. Lucia, and I went to her wedding. Beautiful wedding. I was really looking forward to it. Never been to St. Lucia. I learned it's like so close to Venezuela. I had no idea the geography. Like I'm not great with Caribbean geography. So super cool. I was very excited about it. And like, as soon as the plane landed, my friend, she sent me an article from NPR. She's like, hey, have you seen this? And it was like about a volcano in the Caribbean that had like literally started erupting while I was on my way to St. Lucia. And I was like, oh shit. Mm. And I Googled it and it's literally on the island right below St. Lucia on St. Vincent. And the airport, St. Lucia has two airports. One's like a small private airport and the other one's like the main airport. And the airport's at the southern part of St. Lucia and the volcano was like at the northern part of St. Vincent. So it was literally like 40 miles away. And like, wow. I had noticed when we landed, like it's pretty hazy. It wasn't like the sunny blue Caribbean skies that I had seen when we were like in the Bahamas area when we had left. So I like didn't really think anything of it. And then, my friend got married on Saturday, beautiful wedding. it was still hazy, so it like.
Do you have like a volcano in the background, like shooting off?
No,
like, I do, and then the volcano shoots up.
Part of Saint Lucia, so no, like volcanic background. Should have
planned that out better.
Oh my god! Like I learned so much about volcanoes on this trip. It was literally like a Nat Geo expedition. But wait,
how was the air quality though? Just wondering. I'm curious.
So the air quality was not great because like on Sunday, no, not on Sunday. I'm sorry. On Tuesday, so I was supposed to leave Monday. Let me just throw that out there. Everybody's flights were getting canceled. Like pretty much everybody from the wedding was leaving Monday. A couple people leaving on Sunday, and on Sunday the flights got canceled because of the air quality. And so I was like, oh, sucks to suck. Like I booked my flight Monday, so I'll be out of here. And then Monday, like I woke up really early because I was playing hooky at work and I had to like call out and say like, I'm sick. And I called my job and then I'm supposed to text my bosses and I go to text my bosses and there's a text message from American Airlines, like your flight has been canceled. Like literally one sentence, your flight has been canceled. And literally it was 5 a.m. and I like shit a brick in my bed. And I was like in a room with like another couple like sharing the room and I was like, guys, our flights are canceled. And they immediately start texting everybody like in the group chat. I like call American Airlines and they're like, oh, like the next flight out that has seats available is Thursday. I was like, fucking Thursday. Wow. My dad doesn't even know I'm here. So I ended up staying there. So my friend was able to get, we went through this whole mission of trying to charter a private plane. And like, we have a friend who works in the business and he found us a plane with 14 seats for $46,000. And we were able to rally 12 people. We did the math. It was like $3,200 per person. And we were able to get 12 people to commit to pay that. But we were two people short. So like, long story short, my friend works for a guy who travels privately. And he was like, I can't have you stuck in St. Lucia until Friday. Like, I'm going to get a plane over there. And so we were able to get a flight out to Puerto Rico and then from Puerto Rico to Miami. But like, I literally got the craziest footage. Like once this little plane was up in the air, like you could literally see the ash, like in the atmosphere, it goes from like blue skies with the clouds to like a blanket of gray. And then like my buddy in the front seat of the plane was like, what's that little like cloud back there? And we all looked out and literally the volcano is fucking erupting like while we're flying away from St. Louis.
Nice.
Like, watching
awesome.
The shit grow.
Wow.
Like,
that is so awesome.
It was unreal. And on Monday, by the way, like when all this shit storm was happening, it was raining like all day long. The resort was outdoors. So like we were definitely concerned about air quality. And like the morning that I left, Tuesday morning, I took a video because the pool like was covered in ash. The bottom of the pool had a layer of ash and people had like, there was a little shallow part and people had like written their names in the ash. Like,
oh, that's crazy.
It was like the weirdest thing. I was like, I don't think I will ever be able to travel to the Caribbean without looking up like seismic activity, like without looking up the like
volcanoes.
Dude, wow. The volcano had erupted in 42 years. Years. Wow. And it erupted the weekend I fucking went to my friend's wedding.
By the way, Michelle, keep this in mind, it's very rare to see a volcano erupting. So you
I know.
You hit the jackpot. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. A crazy, like literally trip of a lifetime. But I swear to you, like, you know, people are like, man, like stuck in paradise. No. Like it was fucking awful. Like I was sweating the whole time.
You're scared for your life, you know?
I was just like, get me out of here. I have a job. Like I'm gonna lose my damn job.
That's crazy. A funny thing is that like for me, like when I was moving to LA, I was watching Sandra fall in the movie on the plane. I'm like, oh crap, why am I going to California? You know, I'm watching this movie. And then literally 2 months later, 4th of July, I experienced back-to-back earthquake. And I was like, oh crap.
Oh, did you like punch the earth to like make it stop like the rock did in San
Andreas?
Like, I watched San Andreas, I know what to do, guys. I'm gonna take over.
I was actually making arepa the first time, and we were drinking a little bit, you know, Saturday fun day, and we're like making arepas, and I'm like, am I really that buzz or the ground shaking, guys? We're like, oh crap, this is an earthquake. I was like, and the pan was about to fall off. The first thing I react, save that arepa first, turn the fire off. You know, instead of
priorities,
right?
Wow.
And I mean, but listen, that first experience, I feel like you won't, especially your volcano, and it's just like such a rare experience.
Yeah.
It makes you question, like, wow, okay, my life can end tomorrow. Let me tell you.
Mike, yeah. Mike, the earthquakes in California, they're not very rare.
Like, for me, it is though. Coming from Florida.
But the volcano thing is. No, I did the same thing when I came to San Francisco, the first earthquake. I was like, oh, shoot, like, this is weird. And I'm up in a high rise, so like the building's moving back and forth on purpose. Like, that's how it's made. And I'm like, oh man, it's gonna fall over. We're gonna fall over. But it's scary the first time.
Taking a brick. How? Yes. Like, yes. I cannot. No, thank you. God. But yeah, I literally was like desperate to get off that fucking island. I was like, I was talking to my friends, like, can't we get a boat? Like, what can we do? This shit is like way too far to take.
Moral
a boat
of the again. Story is no people with private jets and private boats. And
no, get you out. Moral of the story is don't plan a destination wedding, you bitches. Like,
what? That's the moral.
Oh my God.
But you don't have this experience if you don't go to this destination wedding.
You can't tell your kids the story now. So
yeah.
You're right. It's
always
like
travel. That was from the last portion of the show. Go travel.
It all ties in, guys.
All right, Jonathan, what's your story of funny things you want to share with us?
Oh man, I told you I don't have one. I try to think of one.
No worries. If you don't have one, no worries.
It's not funny. Just, I guess, maybe respect to you and your family. So, as some of you know, me and Wong were roommates at Disney World as interns. We lived in a nice vacation resort. He hooked us up with all that, right? I think I may have shared this before with you, Wong, but I didn't know like how expensive like really having to eat outside of like the parental home or even outside of school was. Right? I'm like, man, I can't eat out every day. I'm gonna have to cook, right? So Wong and Chi, they were both my roommates. They were cooks, like they were raised that way. Like he said, his mom and dad were chefs. I said, you know what? I'm gonna try it. So I go out and get groceries, and my favorite food is macaroni. And I have
100% sure. A lot of macaroni.
Yeah.
I love macaroni. So I go out and I'm like, hey, all right. So it's got to be Kraft, like the box macaroni, you know, the 99-cent. I get that and I bring it home. And as I'm cooking, I don't know what I'm doing. In my mind, I thought that food already came seasoned, right? You just have to put the water or put it in a pan. You don't have to add anything additional. So I figure whatever came in that box, whatever came in that package, just cook it and you're going to be good. So I do that and I put the water in with the macaroni. Probably should have been milk. I put the noodles in and made it soft, and I put the little sauce in there that comes in the packet.
And that was cheese. It.
Right. So I'm like, okay, it's yellow. It looks like macaroni.
It's done.
As I scrape it onto the plate, I'm hungry at that point. So I'm at the point where it's like, hey, let's kill the hunger pains. It's not about enjoyment. Let's kill these hunger pains.
Yeah.
And then Wong comes in. He's like, hey, what are you cooking? I said, man, I'm cooking my favorite, macaroni and cheese. He said, okay, let me try some. And then I said, okay, whatever. And he goes, he said. he's like, okay, not bad, not bad. he just walks off.
But
he was so disappointed. he introduced me. He said, hey, look, I have a whole cabinet of seasoning right here. And in that moment, I knew food didn't come already good. You have to put extra stuff on it. So, thank you. You and your to get me back to my chef's.
Okay, so Jonathan, though, you approved throughout your internship. You start making chicken, season your food. Let me tell you, he improved in those 3 months dramatically, okay?
Wow. It's a jackpot. terms of learning how to cook and seasoning your food, living with Wong for sure.
Yeah, living with Wong, that'll help. Actually, I live with Wong. I didn't learn how to cook at all. But Wong also wasn't around most of the time when we lived together. He was a consultant, traveling. So he's traveling all the time.
Oh, right? You missed the Wong experience.
Hey, Robert, what's your topic? Oh,
funny thing is, I went into yesterday, like California officially opened up after, like, they're officially open. Everything's good now. So I went into the office for the first time yesterday, and we talked about this with someone else on the podcast about like how interactions are going to be awkward, but it is really awkward seeing people for the first time in like a year and a half. At work, there's no mask because like everyone's vaccinated and they've like done tests and stuff. Like it's where no one in the office is wearing masks anymore. I don't think most people outside are wearing masks either. I think it's a little drastic going from like shut down for a year and a half to let's just take off all of our masks. Like for me mentally, I'm like still phasing that out. But yeah, I went into the office and I'm like seeing people for the first time that I've been working with for like a year and I haven't met before. And so I'm like introducing myself. I'm like, I'm just running into people that I've been working with. I'm like, oh, hey, what do I say now? Like,
nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. No, do I shake your hand? Pound? I don't know what to do. Like, I feel so weird in that situation. And it's a experience. Like you gotta ramp up to it. But I'm like, I feel like I don't know how to interact with people anymore. It's crazy.
So how awkward was it? Some of the experiences.
A lot of it's just like me. It's a lot of me, right? Everyone else is like, "Hey, like, what's going on?" I'm like, "Hey," and I like go blank. I don't know what I'm like. I don't know. I talk to people all the time, but for some reason, when I'm in person with them, I like lose my mind and I don't know what to say. I'm like, "Hey, good seeing you." Like, I haven't seen you. Like, this is the first time we met in person. Like, I was like, oh, hey. Like, wow. It's, like, it's shocking to me that I'm seeing people.
Like, let me ask you this, though. Does it feel like you don't know them, or it's like, hey, I've already met you kind of dude?
No, like, I've met them all, and I know that not socially, but, like, we hang out, and, like, we've, like, worked on a lot of stuff for a long time, so then we, like, get to know each other, but it's just, like, how, like, interacting face to face, it's like
that awkward transition from like being on a square to like the in person and everything like that entails. Yeah, you know, like all the little nuances, like where do you stand, like where
what do I do with my hands? Like,
a little elbow tap.
Funny thing is that so I started going to Orange Tree without a mask, and one of the instructors said, "Hey, wow, we can see your face reaction, your pain now." You know, because when we were going to Orange Tree, we had to wear a mask the whole time. First of all, it's already hard breathing already without a mask. With the mask, it's even worse, right? But then we took the mask off, and we're like, oh, so you guys are struggling. Still, like, you guys should be used to by now. You know, you've been training with masks on.
So that's the reason why my fitness routine went down the drain. I was like, I can't do this in a mask. Like, I'm going to suffocate. It was hard.
Excuses.
Holding on to it, okay?
All right, well, listen, Michelle, Jonathan, thanks for hopping on, and cheers to you all. Cheers to 1 year anniversary, Robert.
Cheers, you know,
cheers. Cheers. And this is definitely fun. Hopefully you like this structure better. So going forward, we're going to do one topic question. That's what we're going to do going forward every single episode. So this is our new structure, and for those who are watching us on YouTube right now or Twitch, thanks for hopping on. Robert, you want to pick it off with me?
Yeah. Do you guys, Jonathan or Michelle, do you guys want to pimp anything? I put up your Instagrams and your Twitters on the screen. It'll be down in the description. You guys have anything you guys want to plug before you go?
Nah.
All right. That's
try vegetarianism.
There we go.
No. Take it.
We got disagreements here.
Edit that out.
Joking, guys.
All right, well, everybody watching, we want you guys to like hit that like button, smash the subscribe button,
leave a comment.
And then everybody listening to us on the podcast apps, you guys can subscribe, listen to us every week. And then if you guys want to check out all of our episodes, they're on our website, www.gfothoughts.com.
Appreciate it, everybody. Thanks for coming on.
Hey!
All right, thanks for hopping up. Thanks, Michelle. Thanks, Jonathan, for joining us. Appreciate that.
Yeah. Peace, yeah.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gluten-Free Organic Thoughts podcast. As always, we appreciate you. If you are watching us on YouTube, please don't forget to subscribe to our channel, like this episode, and leave us a comment. If you are listening to us, please leave us your honest review on your preferred podcast listening platform. And as always, you can find us on social media at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at GFOT Thoughts. Drop a comment and give us some feedback. We would love to hear from you. Until next time, see you then.